Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We have an exciting show for you actually tonight, I think, because we're going to talk all things Chad Daybell opening statements, and I have so many questions for Dr. John, who, for those of you new here, we've had some new subscribers who are following along the Chad Daybell trial. John is my husband.
Well, before we start, I'm just going to do a quick plug for your Lunch Lives, because I think they're amazing. I've been watching when I can, but I'm getting ready for a couple of trials myself in the next 2 or 3 months, and I'm a bit swamped with some things at the moment too. But your Lunch Lives have been really, I've learned a lot from watching your Lunch Lives, and they're really terrific, and you're making some great observations that, as far as I can tell, no other channels are making, and I really appreciate it. And so I think I would urge our gems, if they're not tuning into those, to really watch your Lunch Lives, because I think you're doing a great job. And I mean, I'm learning so much from them, and please continue them. So where should we start with? Let's talk about the opening statements, because obviously those are important. Do you want to start with Rob Wood, or do you want to start with John Pryor?
Let's start with
Rob.
Okay. I like that. Rob Wood.
I think he did a good job. Let me start by saying that. He came out of the blocks with a statement about what he said. I'll summarize essentially what he said. He said two dead children were buried in Chad Daybell's backyard, and his wife was found dead in their marital bed. And 17 days later, he was married in Hawaii to Lori Vallow Daybell. So, I mean, you know, you and I both know this case is extremely complex. And I think in those couple of sentences, he captured the essence of it. So in that sense, I applaud him for starting with, you know, he mentioned Charles Vallow's murder later, but the two dead children and the death of Tammy are the main charges here. So he came out of the blocks with those. I thought that was well done. And then he's already creating a story. He's creating a narrative. He by throwing in the 17 days later, he gets married in Hawaii to Lori. He's obviously starting to, you know, he's getting the jury's attention. And one thing I've talked about often in the past is the juries respond to stories. Juries often will convict based on who tells the better story. And not only that, not just the better story, but the better story that's backed up with evidence. So if you can get the evidence to fit a narrative that makes sense and it's coherent and it's logical, that's typically the one that's going to sway the jury. So when a defense team comes out with kind of a haphazard story or a disconnected story, or when they don't really mount a defense that makes a lot of sense or doesn't really challenge the evidence sufficiently, they're at a little bit of a disadvantage. Although the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, that tends to give the defense, depending on the situation, it might give the defense a little edge to start off, because beyond a reasonable doubt is a fairly high standard to reach. So most defense teams, their initial goal is just to introduce some reasonable doubt, whatever that looks like. And Pryor, by the way, jumping ahead here, Pryor is clearly trying to do that. He's throwing in questions about DNA evidence and forensic evidence. And so he's trying to get the jury's attention in terms of, you know, reasonable doubt. That is the prosecution going to make their case in such a solid way that it is beyond reasonable doubt?
That is the concern, right? Is a good story is one thing, but that reasonable doubt is a stressful thing. And I think it's what I've been feeling.
I think he started with a really good summary that he kind of put the main story out there, that you have two dead children, you have a deceased wife, you have him getting married quickly afterwards. I think that's laying the foundation. And he talked about that Chad was trying to fulfill, this is a term that Rob used, he was trying to fulfill, quote, his rightful destiny. Mm-hmm. So he's throwing in this idea of, which I think is completely pertinent to Chad Daybell, but this idea of that there is a teleological argument, meaning that there is, that the goal here is to reach a specific goal or a specific endpoint. And for Chad Daybell, that is the end of the world, the apocalypse, and then the second coming, and then the New Jerusalem, which is out of the book of Revelations. But the idea of a rightful destiny, I think he's also trying to say that Chad is, he sees this as inevitable. And that his rightful destiny, by the way, is, and he brought, like they did with Lori, they brought in the idea of sex, money, and power as the main motivations driving Chad. So not surprisingly, they're tying it in with Lori's case in the sense that they see those as the main motivations, and those are the elements of the case that they're going to focus on. He also did describe Chad as being ambitious, that he sees this as a case of ambition. And, you know, that actually reminded me a little of Macbeth, because for those who know me, they know I love Shakespeare, and Macbeth is one of my favorite plays. And the famous turn in Macbeth is vaulting ambition. It's a story of ambition and someone who wanted to be king and would search for the crown no matter what it took to get there, including murder, and murdering many families, by the way, along the way. So I think that was a strong start. You know, I think it's a very difficult case to summarize.
To say the least.
And so I think any prosecution team is up against it in this case, because it's not something that can be summarized simply. But I think he put the main components out there, and obviously his job is to prove what he said, to back it up with facts. But I think he did a good job of doing that. I think he was maybe a little nervous, but you know, I think there seemed to be a little anxiety, but I mean, he's on a worldwide stage, so I don't blame him. I think I would be extremely nervous in that predicament as well. But I think all told, he carried himself well and did a good job. I think it's a challenge for a prosecutor to determine how emotional to get versus kind of, you know, how rational versus how emotional. And I thought that he tried to walk that tightrope, but I mean, he wasn't particularly emotional. He was pretty stoic for the most part, but you know, that could go either way in terms of presenting this type of case. If you get overly emotional, then the jury can think you're overly invested and you're not being rational enough and you know, leaning on facts. And if you're overly rational, it appears that you're too detached. So it's a really difficult line to walk, but I think Rob did a good job overall, and he set the stage. And then at the end, he came back to he summarized again. So he bookended his opening statement with his final statement, with, he came back to the two dead children in the backyard and his wife, you know, Tammy, and found dead in her, in the marital bed. So I thought that was a compelling way to end, is that he went back to he reiterated that opening sentence at the end. So I covered, yes, kind of the basics of Rob Wood, but John Pryor's opening statements are really interesting. I think the big theme from the opening statement of John Pryor is, from what I can gather, is that Lori is this femme fatale who seduced Chad Daybell and took him on this wild ride and left him breathless. And apparently when he caught his breath, he learned that a bunch of people were dead, and somehow he had nothing to do with that. So,
right.
Which obviously is why Rob Wood began his opening statement by saying that they were in his backyard. But, you know, one of the things that the defense attorneys do is that they try to reframe everything. So for those mental health professionals out there that know when we deal with mental health problems, that's kind of one of the tricks of mental health professionals, is to try to describe it. And reframing is when you take something and you try to spin it a little bit and present it more positively. So if somebody's suffering from severe depression, for example, you know, reframing that would try to lessen that description, or we would try to redescribe it from being severely depressed to being a little, I don't know, a little upset or something. And so in other words, it's reframing is spinning something to put it in a more positive light. And clearly, you know, that's what defense attorneys do. That's their job. So it, you know, Rob Wood says that the bodies were found in Chad's backyard. And then Pryor comes and says in his statement, he says that he had a farm and that the bodies were in a pasture, kind of implying that his property was so large, apparently, that Alex Cox, I mean, Alex Cox, by the way, is going to be a big player in this defense, no doubt. But the implication, I think, was that Chad, because his yard is so large and he lives on this farm with a pasture, which he wouldn't call his backyard, that, yeah, of course, a couple bodies could turn up, because how would he know? How could he possibly know that Alex Cox and Lori were placing bodies in his backyard, or, you know, in his pasture on his farm, right? So you have Pryor's trying to take what seems obvious to the prosecution and reframe it in such a way that the jury might question it. So he's obviously starting that process. He's mentioned that he'll show, according to him, that the DNA evidence is not accurate or false. He mentioned that several times that Lori, you know, pursued, I'm going to quote him, that Lori, quote, pursued him, encouraged him. You know, so he's trying to reframe their relationship also, obviously, right? He's trying to present this love story as a story in which Lori is this vixen, this black widow who pursues him, overwhelms him, takes control of him, and somehow or another commits these crimes. So he's well on his way to doing that. Or I should say he's well on his way to trying to do that.
Yeah, he is. It's making me a little nervous, actually.
Nervous in the sense that you think that's accurate, or nervous that the jury may buy into that well-worn trope of the, you know, black widow.
Well, let me remind you, when we started our podcast in 2020, and we started with Chad Daybell, we didn't really know how quickly our podcast would grow. And we started with Chad. We turned on the microphones in our living room for the first time. And I said, okay, let's talk about Lori. And your first response to me was, well, before we talk about Lori, we really need to talk about Chad. I was like, okay. And then we turned on for episode 2 and you weren't done with Chad. And then we ended up talking about Chad for the next 5 episodes while people screamed at us and said, when are you going to talk about Lori? And the reason people were more interested in Lori is because they thought just that there hadn't been a lot of evidence that had come out. And they did think that she was the Black Widow, and that so many people wrote, oh my goodness, Chad Daybell was probably next. You know, he was going to be killed by her. So if we go back to a time and place where there was very little evidence on this case, what did people jump to? They jumped They jump to Lori Vallow being a Black Widow and Chad Daybell really just being lucky to be alive. So with that in play, yeah, I'm nervous.
Right. If you start with the assumption that the jury knows nothing about this case, then you'd have concerns that perhaps that argument might have some traction, that if you have even one jury member who believes that someone like Lori could come along and, to use the term that Pryor used, that she was very, he said she's very manipulative, that mm-hmm. she changes everything. He described her, he talked about her many marriages, right? I mean, he's clearly portraying her as someone who, well, let's back up for a second and let's think about, so here's the problem with Pryor's argument. Is that in order for that narrative to be compelling, he has to assign a motive to Lori. And, okay. You know, his opening statement was disjointed in the sense that he didn't present a compelling story that was coherent. He threw out a bunch of fragments about that Lori, he clearly is portraying her as this vixen that's seductive and manipulated Chad and led him on this whirlwind romance that Chad wasn't prepared for. And, but it's not clear why. It's not clear what the motives are. And I think that's where he really runs into problems. So that if you look at, if you try to dig deeper into the story that Pryor's about to tell, I think there's only a few places you can land. And so a big part of the story would be Alex Cox. Mm-hmm. So he talks about Alex Cox as being Lori's protector, that Alex Cox would do anything to protect her, that Alex Cox was always there for her. And so I think if you want to assign motive here, I think you'd have to look at the possibilities. And the first possibility is he going to go to Alex Cox being the lone wolf protector? Is it possible, right? These are the options. Is it possible that Alex Cox did this because somehow he saw Lori getting caught up in this romance with Chad Daybell that wasn't good for her, and he did it? I don't know how that would be protecting her, by the way, to murder all these people, but I'm following the logic of Pryor's argument here. Yeah. Did Alex Cox act on his own? Did he somehow think that Lori needed to have this done, right? And so is it possible that we can point the finger at Alex and blame him for everything? That would be one option. I don't really see that as a compelling argument because I'm pretty sure that the prosecution put on evidence showing that Alex took direction from everyone else, including Lori. So I think the lone wolf argument is going to be a real stretch. You know, it's possible that Pryor might, a defense team does not have to give motive. Again, they only have to establish reasonable doubt. So he could throw out 50 ideas and hope that one or two stick. So he doesn't necessarily have to do what I'm suggesting here, which is to present a story with motivations and reasons. And I think if he did, it would be more compelling. But I think he knows there's a risk of doing that. But anyway, so this is one option. He might imply that Alex took this on his shoulders and did everything, and Lori didn't know. Another problem with that is obviously Lori's convicted. So Lori's a convicted murderer. So clearly she had a role and she played a role and she knew what was going on. But that's one option. The other is that Lori asked Alex Cox to help. And she did it behind Chad's back without Chad knowing, so that perhaps her motive was that because she saw herself and Chad establishing this new Jerusalem and she knew the apocalypse was coming, perhaps she asked Alex to do it so that Chad and herself could act unimpeded in terms of gathering the 144,000, right? That they could walk into the New Jerusalem without having to worry about children and taking care of children. And so I guess that's another argument here, is that you'd have to say that Lori took it upon herself to have Alex commit these murders without Chad knowing, so that she could then align with Chad and the two of them could, you know, walk into the second coming or the New Jerusalem without having to worry about, and they could gather the flock without having to worry about children.
Okay.
You lose weight, it comes back. You lose it again, it comes back again. And if this cycle sounds familiar, you're not alone, and there is a better way. What if you could take a weekly shot to lose weight and keep it off? That's where Ro comes in. Ro provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. The Ro Body Program pairs a weekly shot with lifestyle changes so you can lose weight and keep it off. Ro handles it all, even insurance paperwork. If eligible, you have access to a provider on demand. You can sign up online from home, no doctor's visits. Average weight loss, get this, 15 to 20% in a year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria do apply. Go to ro.co/hidden. Sign up today and you will pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's Ro, ro.co/hidden.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But again, the problem with that argument, it goes back to the very beginnings of our podcast, where I argued that this is Chad's story, this is Chad's belief system, right? That if Chad is driving the bus here, then that's going to be a really hard argument to make. But he could say that Lori's motive, and again, Lori's a convicted murderer, so he could say that Lori's motive was to join with Chad without the children in the way.
Right. Which is what Rob Wood is sort of set up. The Chad wanted the children out of the way. That's sort of what Rob Wood, I know we're talking about prior, but isn't that sort of what Rob
Wood? Right. Well, what I'm saying is that Pryor's trying to shift that narrative and say that it wasn't Chad that wanted the children out of the way. It was Lori.
It was Lori. Right.
They had similar motivations. It's just that, Pryor's argument, they had the same motivations. It's just that Lori did it and not Chad, that Lori was the one who wanted the children out of the way.
Right. Right. That was Lori. Lori is the reason for everything. Can I ask you too about, I mean, one of the things John Pryor was sharing about Lori was her sexuality a lot. That, I mean, he explained that Lori had a history, John Pryor did. First off, no one can bring up the fact that Joe Ryan might have been murdered because police have stated twice now that it's natural causes. So there is no murder of Joe Ryan to bring up. So the things that John Pryor brought up about Lori to imply that she has a past is that she had been divorced and remarried. She had several marriages, and that her brother Alex went to prison for tasing her ex-husband, Joe Ryan. I mean, none of those give Lori a record. And then the other issues that he brought up with Lori's past are that Lori is a sexual person he kept referring to that, a beautiful, drop dead gorgeous. And he used the word sexual, that she's sexual. Like that was something that is concerning. What do you make of that? I'm just curious your thoughts about that being part of his defense.
Yeah, but what's the motive? He's not, that's the problem here. Like, if you can't give me a motive, it's one thing to say, to point the finger at Lori and say, okay, she's responsible, she did all this. But why? The problem with that argument is she is sitting in prison right now for the rest of her life. Three lives over, she's sitting in prison. And she is still so devoted to Chad Daybell.
I know. But the jury doesn't know that.
I know the jury doesn't know that, right. But I mean, I'm just saying that that's correct. That, I mean, it's unfortunate the jury doesn't know that. But what, I mean, what's her goal? So is it that Lori, I use the term femme fatale, right? Is it that Lori, is she sadistic? I mean, maybe we know she is kind of sadistic, but I mean, is this just a woman who runs over men? She intentionally harms them. She uses them. And Chad was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. He's just a nice guy that happened to be giving a lecture at a conference, and Lori just came up and introduced herself. And from there on, he had no choices. He couldn't control himself. He just went along with the program. Right. So in order to think that, you'd have to argue that Lori is using him and harming him intentionally just because she likes it, just because she enjoys it. That's neglecting this whole larger narrative about the second coming. And right, I mean, it's
Chad's history. Go ahead. Sorry, the second coming.
That you can't make sense of this case if you point the finger at Lori and you just say she's this femme fatale who took Chad Daybell on this ride, and she got rid of the kid. She used Alex to kill the children for no apparent reason other than the fact that she wanted to cause harm to someone that she could manipulate and use, and for, I don't know, use for what is not clear. Like money, is it money? Is it sex? As many people have pointed out, I mean, let's say it's sex. Pryor's bringing that up a lot. Her previous marriages involved people that many people have commented on seemed like better suited partners for her.
Let me decipher what John is saying. He's saying Chad wasn't much of a looker. I think that if what she wanted was sex, there were other options. I sometimes have to just
come down
what John's saying.
Okay. Right. If she's just interested in money and sex, let's say hypothetically, again, putting this on Lori, then there's other, I'm sure she has many other options to pursue in terms of men that are a lot wealthier than Chad Daybell, and men that might be more sexually appealing to Lori than Chad Daybell. You know, we've talked about this. What's the physical attraction to Chad Daybell? Many people have asked us this. And I think it's not necessarily about the physical attraction. It's about his belief system.
Right.
It's about being enamored by his books and seeing his books as scripture, right? And that's where Pryor can make this argument, but he's ignoring the context. He's ignoring the fact that all of this is occurring in the larger context of religious beliefs and extreme religious beliefs. And that's where Chad Daybell, that's where his history comes into play here. And you can't ignore it. You can't just, I mean, you can, Pryor's trying to do it. You can point the finger at Lori and say, this is all about her. But in some ways you're denying that larger context. You're denying that history that wraps around this case and smothers this case with, you know, Mormon history and beliefs, extreme beliefs, and certain religious beliefs, right? I've said this repeatedly, and I'll say it again now, that every death, every murder that occurred in this case, and even the people like Brandon Boudreau that were shot at, every one of them was considered to be dark, a dark spirit. Every one of them was called a zombie. That's the commonality, right? And so every zombie was designated a zombie by Chad Daybell. So for Lori and Alex Cox to go along with these murders, they had to buy into that belief that they were killing zombies. They were murdering zombies. And murdering zombies can be attributed to that belief, can be attributed to Chad Daybell. But Pryor wants you to forget that little piece. Pryor wants you to just to think, well, okay, yeah, you know, he talked about that in his opening statement. He said he wrote these books. He said, you know, he was a man of faith. He talked about premonitions. He didn't even use the term visions, by the way. That was interesting. He said Chad wrote these books where he talked about premonitions, not visions. He talked about good and evil. He talked about darker subjects. Like, again, here's Pryor, and you know, Pryor's trying to do his job. He's a defense attorney. He's trying to reframe this. He's trying to say Chad wrote these books. He knew they were fiction. He didn't really mean anything when he, you know, that he was just, this was a question of his faith. And so he's minimizing Chad Daybell's involvement and Chad Daybell's beliefs. Chad Daybell's beliefs drive this whole narrative. That's the point. And I hope the prosecution, you know, I know they'll focus on this, but they understand that you can't explain Lori and Alex without looking at the larger picture of Chad's beliefs and how they drive this, these murders and this story, the whole thing.
I agree.
If somebody's not deemed to be dark, then they're fine. They're off the hook. They're not going to be at risk. And if you, you know, even Tylee understood that.
Yeah.
All the players understood that. Zulema understood it. Melanie Gibb understood it. In fact, I'm going to read, this is from the probable cause statement when Lori was charged with murder in Arizona.
Okay.
This is the last page.
Okay.
Now, some of this is redacted. We have some gems that are incredible in terms of figuring out what the redactions are. So I'm using the work of some of our gems here.
Thank you, Julie Holden. And I do think we have the unredacted somewhere. But yeah, we haven't been talking. So you pulled this. It's public. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Julie Holden. For Julie's a wizard at figuring out what the terms are, what should be in the redaction. So this is the last page. Melanie Gibb and Zulema Pestenis have both indicated that Lori got her advice and direction from Chad Daybell. Those are two major players in this situation. Melanie and Zulema have indicated that Lori got her advice and direction from Chad Daybell. When giving instructions, Zulema stated that Lori would always say, "I have been told." So Lori would always say, before taking on action on anything, "I have been told." She's been told by Chad Daybell. Messages identified above have indicated that Chad Daybell was aware of the work with zombies and specifically the work that Zulema and Lori were doing on Charles prior to 7/11 of 2019, which is when Charles was murdered. I don't know, like, The prosecution's clearly going to call witnesses that are going to show that this wasn't Lori leading the charge. This wasn't Lori designating people as light and dark. This wasn't Lori giving directives to people. That Lori, and again, Lori would always say, "I have been told." that doesn't sound like someone to me that's manipulating Chad Daybell and grabbing him by the hand and pulling him along without his volition, without Chad Daybell having any agency.
I'm sorry, but you just said grab him by the hand and pull him along. And all I could think about was the text used in the closing statements for Lori and the text Chad sent Lori that said, if you grab me by the something else, the storm, I will go anywhere you want me to go. Sorry, is that a problem? But yeah, go ahead. Right, so point taken is, I guess, what I'm saying.
The other thing that Pryor also is getting a lot of his facts wrong. The other thing that Pryor said is that he talked about Charles getting murdered. He said Alex shot him. He said, quote, Chad, quote, had nothing to do with the execution of Charles. Let me read again from the probable cause statement out of Chandler, Arizona.
Yeah, and before you do that, I want to say to the people saying, oh, bull, Lori Vallow was driving the bus. Show me the evidence. When you read thousands of pages of evidence,
well, if
when you sit through Lori Vallow's trial, it's not what is shown. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody believes that, then they're on board with Pryor because they're essentially saying that Lori was responsible for everything. I mean, people can obviously have their own opinion and interpret the evidence differently, but that's not what her trial showed.
Right, it's not what her trial showed.
So this is regarding the murder of Charles Vallow. This is from the probable cause statement out of Chandler. Quote, after the murder of Charles Vallow, Chad Daybell not only searched for articles linked to his death, but he placed a call to the mortuary, which is recorded, by the way. Chad placed a call to the mortuary where Charles was to be taken to inquire into the cremation services. During this phone call, Chad Daybell used a family member's name, but provided information that would suggest he was calling about Charles. And by the way, the conclusion of the probable cause was that, quote, it is recommended that Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell be charged with conspiracy to commit murder for the death of her husband, Charles Vallow, on 7/11/2019. So for Pryor to suggest or say that Chad Daybell had absolutely nothing to do with the execution of Charles is not consistent with this probable cause statement at all. Chad was calling the mortuary trying to figure out how to get the body cremated. Why would he do that if he knew nothing about it? So, you know, I mean, a big part of this trial, I'm sure, is going to be the prosecution trying to set the record straight and to correct those inaccuracies. Chad Daybell was not just some innocent guy who had nothing to do with Charles Vallow's death. He's not being charged in that case, but he knew about it. He was calling the mortuary. He was using fake names to get information. He was looking up information on the internet about Charles's death after it happened to see what was going on, to get information. Was Alex Cox going to be charged with murder? Was he not, right? Like, if he had no interest or involvement in that, why was he doing it? So, but again, the defense's job is to get the jury to question information and question facts and question evidence, and that's what he's trying to do here. But is it accurate to say that Chad had nothing to do with it? The other thing that Chad did in that particular case is he called he started the whole process in motion. He called Charles Vallow dark. He said that Charles Vallow was possessed by an evil spirit named Ned Schneider. If you look at the body cam footage before Charles was murdered, Charles is pleading with police to do something about Lori because Lori met this guy, Chad, and they're calling him this evil spirit, Ned Schneider, and he's afraid for his life. Rightly so, by the way.
Yeah, there's a witness to that, Melanie Gibb. For anyone that are curious about all this, I put a lot of this evidence in our Chad Daybell crash course. But Melanie Gibb states this moment that Chad told Lori that Charles was dark and a zombie named Ned Schneider, and Lori was shocked and taking it in. But here's my question though, John. Sorry, go ahead and I'll ask it later. What?
Yeah, no. So what I'm saying is that what Pryor is going to argue, and obviously we've already had some listeners tonight that seem to agree with him. All he needs to do is get one juror that refuses to budge on this issue, and Chad Daybell's not convicted. So
that's what, okay. This is my question. This is what I'm saying. There are people in this chat right now saying, no, Lori was driving the bus. You're wrong. And I'm like, so you guys just want to believe, I mean, honestly, it's a misogynistic view, in my opinion. You want to believe that because Lori was sexy, that Chad had to kill the, you know, mother of his five kids. In other words, because Lori was like so enticing Chad that he just had no choice but to, you know, that she had to influence this. You know, what if one juror on there is a misogynist, like some of the comments in this chat? What if one? And look, I'm not defending Lori Vallow. Thank goodness she's going to be behind bars for the rest of her life. For the rest of her life. May she never see, step out and have a bit of freedom ever again. But that narrative is pretty much saying, yeah, let, you know, poor Chad, you know, he was grabbed by the storm. What else was he supposed to do? He was enticed. Look, listen to this comment. This is crazy.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Gray Hughes says, I think Chad just was appeasing Lori's wishes of deeming certain people zombies. And that's why he killed the mother of his five kids, because he was just appeasing Lori's wishes. And so, I mean, what if there's one guy on the juror that thinks like that?
Lori didn't have the imagination to come up with that system. Chad wrote books. He wrote, I don't know, how many books has he written? He's written 11, but I don't remember the number. But Chad has written a ton of books of fiction on similar themes. Mm-hmm. Chad clearly has the imaginative capacity to develop this system and to see where it can lead and to draw people into this belief system. He drew a lot of people in. So I don't think Lori is so literal and so concrete. I don't think she comes up. I don't think she's capable of developing this system of light and dark and assigning numbers to it. And, you know, claiming that certain people are light. I mean, I guess anybody could do it, but I mean, it's pretty simple, but.
Well, just like the evidence shows it was Chad. Every text they send each other shows it was Chad. You know, but I just am worried. I'm just worried because clearly the evidence is enough for a lot of people in this chat.
And, you know, for those people that are skeptical, let's see what let's see what the evidence is. I mean, that's the prosecution's job, is to present that evidence and to show that Chad wasn't some innocent bystander who was somehow being duped by Lori. Chad was making the rules.
Right. And the evidence shows that.
Right.
And I'm not excusing Lori by saying that. Throw away the key for Lori. She allowed her children to be killed, if not participated.
Yeah, right. I mean, she knew.
She knew.
She knew. She went along with it. She bought into it. She participated. She was a co-conspirator. That's why she's convicted of murder.
Right.
But I guess in theory, I guess if Chad definitely has an advantage.
He does. This is why.
With her trial going before his, he has a huge advantage. He gets to see the strategies. He gets to see the evidence. He gets to see the way with the prosecution's arguments. And he gets a chance to throw Lori under the bus. Which clearly is about to happen. So I'm sure much to Lori's surprise, by the way, much to Lori's chagrin. I don't think Lori believed that her hero was going to throw her under the bus, but here it is.
Well, I'm going to trust the evidence. I keep going back to the evidence. You keep going back to the evidence, just reading that simple probable cause. And so I want to say that I do have faith. I have faith that the evidence will show the jurors that Chad Daybell needs to be held.
And this isn't, I'm reading this from the probable cause because this is the conclusion the police came to. And this is the conclusion they came to after talking to numerous witnesses and looking at all the evidence and look right. And so that's a summary, but I mean, you and I have heard Melanie Gibb talk about it. You and I have heard a number of people talking about the fact that Chad, if you think of this as a cult, that this is Chad's cult. This isn't Lori's cult. So I don't know. I mean, you know, people are entitled to their own opinions, obviously, and they'll see things differently, and that's fine. You know, we want a dialogue about it, but I mean, give me an argument, give me some evidence, like show me why Lori was in charge, show me why and how she was in charge, and give me a motive, because because I mean, Lori, there's no clear motive for Lori to just murder all these people. And also, by the way, with Tammy, Lori was in Hawaii when Tammy Daybell was murdered. Chad was right there.
Her marital bed. Yeah.
Her death was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner. There were bruises on her body, on her arms, like she was held down. I mean, Lori didn't do that. Lori wasn't there. I guess to implicate Lori in Tammy Daybell's death, you'd have to argue that she was giving directions to Alex Cox or Chad. At the very least, Chad, let's assume that Alex Cox murdered Tammy Daybell. Let's just say that, because the so-called paint gun incident was not it wasn't a paintball gun. It was a gun.
Right.
And you had some interesting things to say about that, by the way.
I did, on my lunch live. I showed John that lunch live. I was like, take a look, babe. This is what I'm doing every day.
I totally agreed. That it didn't become a paintball gun until after the fact, until Chad got in Tammy's ear and convinced her. Don't worry, Tammy. Nobody was trying to kill you. That was just a paintball gun.
Classic Chad, that his wife is calling, you know, she's screaming for Chad, and then she ends up being the one that calls 911. You know, I know that you, John, if I ever came screaming, if someone was pointing at me with a gun, you'd be the one on the phone calling 911. And so you can hear Chad in the background. Tammy's having to call 911 herself after screaming for her husband. And yeah, I'm sure he was like, I'm sure it's a paintball gun, dear.
Yeah, we now know that it was Alex Cox who had a real gun that would have, if he was a better shot, that Tammy would have died in that moment. But it was reframed as just a minor incident. Like somebody in Rexburg, Idaho just gets a paintball gun and wants to go after Tammy Daybell for no apparent reason, just because it's fun. Tammy Daybell has no enemies in Rexburg. I mean, it doesn't add up. Let's say that Lori's in charge. She's in Hawaii. So Lori has to give the directive to Alex Cox to go into Chad's home and murder Tammy. Well, I guess the argument with Tammy is not going to be that she was murdered. The argument prior to setting up is that her health was indeed horrendous. And there was natural causes. Right? Because he said he's going to call the Daybell children are all going to take the stand and they're going to tell us that she had serious health problems. And she refused to see a doctor in spite of all her health problems. So I think he's not going to argue that Lori participated in that particular murder, even though, by the way, she's convicted of being a co-conspirator in the murder of Tammy Daybell. So I don't know if the prosecution can bring that in, by the way, but it would be very helpful if they could make that argument. But I guess Pryor's leaning towards natural causes with Tammy Daybell, which would make sense, because in order to argue that Lori murdered Tammy Daybell, it would be through Alex Cox, but Alex Cox would still have to enter the home, that Chad Daybell would have to let him in the home, presumably because he would know what was about to happen, right? I don't think he can go that route.
Right, right. Thank you. Couple questions, couple great comments. Thank you, everyone.
Are people getting you riled up?
Well, I think I got feisty there. And so, yeah, maybe it's true. I was riled up a little bit before seeing some comments, John knows. And so I've just, like I said, put my phone away. And then we found out we were 30 minutes late to our live.
Well, you are genuinely worried about.
Yeah.
About this line of argument, that you're afraid that people are going to really latch onto it, or some of the jury members might latch onto it and ignore the larger context, ignore the fact that this is Chad's belief system, that as I just read, that when people responded to Chad, they said, "I have been told," meaning that, you know, they've been told by Chad.
Right.
So
this is another thing. I didn't show you this lunch live, but I did another lunch live. It was the day where John Pryor was explaining, I guess it was opening statements. It was my opening statements lunch live, where John Pryor was explaining that Lori, you know, had a history and Chad did not have a history. He was just a good family guy who served a mission, got married and had 5 kids. So I pointed out what Collier is pointing out, that Chad Daybell did have a history, and his history was attempting to seduce women with this idea that he had been past life spouses and he was actively looking for women. And Julie Rose says that, you know, Chad Daybell got on top of her during a energy healing session and molested her. I mean, we know there's an Arizona woman. We know that he told Melanie Gibb he was married to her in a past life. I mean, that's kind of a history. And it's, you know, if the history that John Pryor pointed out was about Lori being sexual and other things that are not illegal, then this too is a history to bring up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not going to get Julie Rowe on the stand, but yes, there appears to be, and you've interviewed some other people that knew Chad quite well that have said the same thing, that he, at the very least, he had very poor boundaries around other women. And this is when he was married. So, but right. At the very least, he had poor boundaries. But in some cases, engaged in sexual assault. So yes. So this is not, again, this is not someone who is going to, you know, just submit to Lori, to Lori's wily seductive charms. I mean, this is some guy, right? Exactly. There's prior history on all of it.
Patricia says the kids are going to testify that Tammy was sick. That bothers me. She was using essential oils and refusing to see medical providers, according to Pryor. I hope the state can rebut that. You had a lot to say on the phone one night when we were catching up and you learned this information, John.
Well, it's, yeah, I think I said something to the effect of, oh, great, the kids are going to go perjure themselves to save their dad. I said that at the time, that was probably a bit strong. And the reason that was strong is because to the children who are obviously smitten with their father and could never believe that their father would be capable of murder, to the children, I think that their father has convinced them that it was natural causes. And the children have blinders on and they haven't looked at the evidence. Obviously they weren't, I'm sure they weren't paying attention to Lori Vallow-Daybell's trial. And so at some level, I guess they probably believe that narrative. I think their dad has convinced them that their mother was really sick and died of natural causes. So is that accurate? I know, not based upon the Lori's trial, but it's going to be compelling to have four of his kids get up there and say, my mom was really sick, so I wasn't surprised by this, right? It's the kind of thing that could definitely have some influence on a jury.
Right. My Zumba-loving, clogging, marathon-training 49-year-old mother, who was also working a full-time job as a librarian and running a publishing company, wanted to go to bed early, and she had to rub essential oil on her legs. Heaven forbid, it might have been depression or the fact that she was running 10 million miles an hour and was tired. But yeah, they might do that. They might do that. And it is certainly compelling. And, for Lori's trial, they had the Zumba instructor of Tammy's testify how in shape she was. But then Emma Daybell went to those Zumba classes with her mother. So that's...
Well, you also have the medical examiner ruling it a homicide. You have the injuries on her body. You have the larger context. You have him getting married almost 2 weeks later, getting married in no time whatsoever and claiming that they didn't have any children. Like, you've got, again, and that's not direct evidence, but you have Chad changing his story a number of times about how she died, what happened. Changing your story is never a great sign. I'm sure they're probably going to find some more witnesses to say that her health was fine. There's no medical records to support that she was sick. I guess you could argue she didn't go to doctors, but still, if she was really sick, I mean, I can't imagine that she might not go to one doctor. So there's no support in terms of medical records. It's a little problematic, but there's also the interview with the children. The children did an interview in what, like 2022 or 2021?
I think it was 2021. Yeah.
The children did an interview on 2020 where they essentially said, I believe everything my dad says. I think he was framed. I think he's innocent. And so you can show that they're biased. I think you can show fairly clearly. I don't know what the prosecution's going to use, but I think you can show that the kids aren't really processing reality here. They don't want their father to go away, and they believe everything he tells them, which, by the way, is what somebody who leads a cult does. They get you to believe things that you might not normally believe. But in that family culture, Chad reigns supreme, and I'm sure his kids aren't going to question him. Chad was a dominant guy, and I'm sure his kids went along with the program. So I would imagine that on cross with his kids, they'll ask him those types of questions, and maybe they can play the video from 2020 where they're like, where they say quite explicitly, my dad's innocent. He was framed. They already had that narrative 2 years ago. They haven't budged from it. They visit him in jail, and he tells them that he's innocent, and they believe it. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. At the very least, it'll be interesting.
Lisa, thank you so much. It will be interesting. We need to do these lives more. There's so much to say. How are you doing? We do have a Patreon live that we have to do as well. So how are you doing? What do you want to still cover, John?
I think those are, I'm trying to see, I'm just, again, I go back to if this is Lori and Alex Cox on this breakaway, on this murderous rampage without Chad knowing anything, it bothers me so much to think that, number one, people are losing the larger picture. But also, like, what's the I can't, there's no motive there that makes any sense. And I think, but, and that's my hope, is that juries want the most compelling story. And if a defense team gets up there and they throw out a bunch of different ideas and they don't all fit, that's confusing to juries. I don't know that Pryor's going to make that fit. He's going to have to give Lori some motives that make sense to a jury. And if you argue that Lori and Alex Cox framed Chad Daboll, why did they do it? She was his most devoted servant. She had no motivation to do that. I mean, yeah, the jury won't see that, but we can see it.
Yes.
So the question is why? If you're going to buy that, why would she do that, right? And that Pryor, he doesn't have to explain that, but I think that's going to be a challenge for him. And I think jury members could be shaking their heads saying, well, okay, you know, she's this vixen that seduced him and led him astray. And maybe she got her brother to commit these murders. But why did she do that? Did she do it just because she's malicious and wants to murder her kid? Like, right. You have to tell me a story that makes sense.
Right. Edamame says, there's no way Pryor came up with all these defense rationales by himself. Chad is 100% aware and approves of Pryor's strategy. I do want to say, I think you're right. Well, and this idea, I want to point out that there's more than just Chad being framed by Lori and Alex. The strategy, it goes much further than that. The strategy is going to be, not only was he framed by Lori and Alex, but that it was also staged and perhaps also framed, he was also framed by Rexburg police. And I want to point that out and suggest that that is actually where Pryor is going and where I think Chad does approve of this. And I have heard that perhaps that's where his kids are too. How do his kids surpass all the idea of this evidence that was displayed in Lori's trial? It was planted.
Okay, right. So
He's brought up some things, John. Like, so John, like during was it opening statements or was it cross exam with Ray Hermosillo? It's all blurred into a day. Ray Hermosillo was explaining how they searched the townhome and found an awful Halloween mask. And John Pryor said, well, where was this bin? It sounds like it was staged. So he's already sort of.
But again, like, let's go back to motive. Why would they do that? Why would they frame him? Are they framing him because he's this world-renowned author that they're so jealous of, that they can't stand it, that he's living in their community? Are they framing him because Heather Daybell's in their ear saying,
Can I give one suggestion? And this is completely my thought. This is not me hearing it from somewhere. This is me taking the idea of wow, John Pryor is going to go into Chad Daboll being framed by not just Lori and Alex, but by the Rexburg Police Department. And so I take that and I think, well, what's the motive going to be? What's the motive? Here's one thing that I thought of. Detective Hope is on the Rexburg Police Department. So Detective Hope is on the Rexburg Police Department. Detective Hope's son is married to Heather and Matt Daybell's daughter. So I wonder if they're going to bring that. It's still not a motive, but I'm going to suspect that is why Heather Daybell's been subpoenaed. This is completely me speculating.
So again, it's a small town, number one. Let's go. So those types of relationships are unavoidable in small towns. But putting that aside, what's the motive? So the motive is jealousy that Heather doesn't like Chad. So Heather is apparently talking to family about framing him? Is that like...
So Heather doesn't like Chad. Right. Why? Is it jealousy? Is Heather jealous of his books? And then it becomes... And then all of a sudden her daughter's father-in-law gets involved somehow because he's like, yeah, Heather's right. No, I know it doesn't make any sense.
And the more you expand those circles, those conspiratorial circles, by the way, the harder it gets to explain.
Yeah.
The more you have to see Lori and Alex working with Rexburg police, right? If the police had an issue with Lori, then why... Then why did they essentially testify at her trial of how guilty she was? It doesn't add up. If it was a conspiracy and she was in with the police, then I guess they had to turn on her. Right? I don't know. That's where the facts, that's where the evidence leads us to the right conclusions, or a jury to the right conclusions, right? That's always the goal of the system.
Right.
The goal of the judicial system is to get reasonable human beings on a jury. And most juries get it right, by the way. Most juries are pretty astute. I mean, sometimes they don't, but you put 12 people together, 12 reasonable human beings together, and they're quite capable oftentimes of coming up with really insightful conclusions. So I that's why you have this trial.
Yes.
But I think Pryor is going to start tripping over himself if he wants to keep expanding that, the conspiratorial involvement of all these players. I think it's going to be more difficult. In some ways, if he wants to go down this path, I think his best argument is just to say Alex Cox did it. That Alex Cox was trying to help us, the lone wolf thing, because Alex Cox is deceased. And you could, right? I'm not saying it's a good argument, but I mean, if you want to keep things simple, that would probably be the best way to go. But I mean, apparently he doesn't want to keep it simple. So, that could be a problem. That's probably going to, I'm sure we'll be talking about this in a few weeks.
So John and I are going to do our first ever Patreon live. We've been promising our Patreon gems this weekend, an episode. And John and I just finally decided to figure out how to do a Patreon live. I tested it, before this. So we hope you guys all join us there for those that want to continue this conversation, but we've had our little guy come in here. So we do need to conclude this. But for those that want to know about Patreon, you just join and then click the link. And that is what you do on Patreon. So anyway,
the last comment, by the way, about you can't ignore the fact that the bodies were found in Chad's backyard. That's true, but that's not definitive proof.
Right.
Right. I think there's problems there. I mean, you have his cell phone placing him in the backyard after Tylee goes missing, and you have Tylee's body at the same place where Chad's cell phone is pinging, and you have the text to Tammy that also indicate that something nefarious is going on that's not involved, that doesn't involve a raccoon. But ultimately, it might be a stretch, but ultimately you could argue that Alex and Lori put the bodies in Chad's backyard without him knowing. That it just because they're in his backyard doesn't necessarily mean that he knows. I mean, it seems obvious that clearly he knows something but it's not a direct, it's not something you can prove, right? That's the problem. You can't, it's still circumstantial in a way because you can't, nobody saw him back there. I think that's where it becomes a little nerve-wracking.
Anyway, again, for our Patreon members, because this is such a tight weekend, we are so excited to go live with you over there. If anyone wants to continue this conversation with us, such an amazing group, head over to Patreon. The description to our live is in the description of this video or in chat. And so we'll keep talking over there. Thank you to those who do support us on Patreon and who do support us with YouTube memberships. We are so grateful. And thank you to those who gift memberships here, because we want everyone to be a hidden gem. Everyone is so incredible. We are going to cover this trial beginning to end. And John is doing the best work, I want you to know, babe, by being a full-time parent. And I love you. And it means so much to me and to Banks and to our family, all that you're doing too, so that we can cover this important trial and see this through.
So thank you. Well, you're doing the hard work by being up there.
Yes. And then I do want to apologize. It does not make anyone a misogynist to think that Lori might play a major part in this, but I will say it lacks looking at all of the evidence. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that did. When you said that, it seemed a little strong, but I mean, you have strong feelings about it and opinions about it, and we've been thinking about this for a long time. So I understood why you would say that, but
it just is hard for me to imagine, like, with all the evidence, how someone could process that. And, you know, the whole idea, I mean, really, John Pryor's, I feel like the opening statement, there was a lot of what we would call in this day and age slut shaming too, you know, just this idea that a sexual being would, anyway, we won't get into it.
Yeah.
Sorry if anybody felt targeted.
He's definitely capitalizing on kind of a tried and true trope, a narrative about women as seducers and femme fatales. And, you know, it's very stereotypical. It's cliched. And that's not to say it doesn't happen. I just think it doesn't happen in these cases. It didn't happen in this case. It might happen in other cases, but it didn't happen here.
Yes. Yes. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see our Patreon gems over on Patreon. We'll be right there. We'll just keep this going. All right. We'll see you guys. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'll see you Monday. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.